Hello, everybody. Assume you can hear me. I get this thing, it's too loud from up there, but it's different. Okay, so I want to tell you about this ADL coordinates, because you might say, what are Lagvanenko's coordinates in the first place? And I assume most of you don't know, since it's a relatively new paper. He published a paper in the Journal of Vision last year, and in which he proposes a color space to represent the color of objects independent of the illumination. That's quoting from his, and he's got it based on an ideal color atlas. So he's after a color atlas comprising the reflected spectra with two transitions across the spectrum. And I'll show you some of these things in a moment. So the and it's complete. So we've got this one-to-one and covers everything that you want to talk about in terms of colors. So why bother computing his coordinates and what's hard about it? Anyway, I found the paper very interesting and his atlas very interesting and novel, and that got me just kind of curious. And so I got talking to him and that kind of thing. And his implementation that he had was very slow, and he was quite frustrated. It was taking him days of computation to compute these coordinates for the 1600 Mun cells, and hence it wasn't feasible to test and work on using regular images. So that, being a computer scientist, got me going. So we've got an implementation that we describe here and is available on our webpage, which reduces this computation from days to seconds. It's still not milliseconds, but the 1600 go down to 90 seconds or less. So some background concepts that you need to know kind of before we get going into what he was after in terms of his atlas and how he describes it. So he's after describing object surface object color in terms of reflectances that are representatives. He picks one reflectance that represents the set of possible metameric reflectances in the class. So we need these background things, object color solids, the notion of an optimal reflectance spectra, and two transition reflectance spectra, which some of you will be familiar with because it's existed for a while. The object color solid is the set of all x, y, z's that we can get from a set of all possible surface reflectances, and it's figured out how to get the boundary of this was figured out quite a long time ago. But one thing I should mention is that the object color solid is dependent on the illuminant. So if we go from D65 to A, we have a different set of possible colors, clearly enough. So the optimal reflectance functions, which do define the surface of the object color solid, have no metamerism between them. There's a set of optimal reflectances that are one-to-one between the X, Y, Z's and the optimal reflectance. And what do they look like? And they, Schrodinger came up with these a long time ago, they are just two transition functions, step functions with a zero or one and no more than two transitions. So you have two kinds, this kind, which is just a regular rectangle, or this kind where you have a split. So these are the two possible types of optical reflectance functions. And if you take these reflectances and light them under the light, you will get the surface of the boundary of the object color solid. And I've shown a couple of examples here under D65. So we have two different reflectances get you two different points. The set of all of these get you all of the colors on the boundary. So that's very convenient. Lagvanenko looked at this and thought he could do something with that. His basic idea was to use the optimal reflectances for the boundary colors because they are unique. So there was a unique reflectance. So it gives part of the problem solved in terms of having an atlas, where an atlas is describing coordinates for you. And he wants coordinates which don't depend on the illuminant. That's a crucial thing that he's after. He decided to use gray as the center of the color solid as the origin for the coordinates, and then describe any other color by its radial distance from gray to that optimal color. So in pictures in a cross-section, okay, it's a 2D cross-section, I've got gray at the middle, and if we have some color stimulus, some X, Y, Z, Z that we're afterwards, X, Y, Z, whatever we're afterwards, whatever the color stimulus we're trying to talk about, then we can see that it's on a line to an optical reflectance that's on the surface of the color solid boundary. So that gives a way to talk about where they are. So we have three coordinates. He then takes alpha, which is the fraction of the way it is along, or the ratio there. So we're talking about what fraction of the way between G and O is C. So that we have O specifies something and the the fraction of the way specifies something more. Those two things together give you a three-parameter description. Okay, so kind of summing it up here, we have to, summing up his description, it's three parameters describing a reflectance. The reflectance is of an optimal reflectance, and an optimal reflectance has two interesting things to talk about. One is the central wavelength, sort of the middle of that square pulse, and the spectral bandwidth, which is the width, or the half width of the pulse, or the pulse is not the right word, but that square wave, and then the fraction of the distance we were along, the alpha, gives us the third thing. So, so we have those two parts, and he calls it a rectangular metamer, so that was the rectangular piece, plus gray, because when we're doing the fractional distance along, we're adding a certain amount of gray, so that's a flat spectrum standing for gray. So the final color is described as gray plus alpha times the original color minus the gray. What do these rectangular metamers look like? We've got gray, which is a half, flat gray, plus the optimal reflectance. The two components we're adding together. And to describe the optimal reflectance was taking us two parameters, two things to describe it, its spectral bandwidth and its central wavelength. Plus the fraction of gray gives you three things. So we have a rectangular metamer, which is defined by those three pieces, the alpha, the central wavelength, and the bandwidth, or alternatively by the alpha and the two limits of the pulse, the lambda 1 and lambda 2. You can do it either way. So the ADL descriptor specifying a color, to talk about its coordinates in a sense, of a color stimulus of an XYZ, by its rectangular metamer, we're returning the three parameters give us a rectangular reflectance function, and he labels them with alpha, delta, and lambda, or sometimes it's easier just to say them as A, D, and L for obvious reasons. So often you should just call it ADL coordinates or ADL, but if you're writing it, talking it, so the ADL and alpha, delta, lambda kind of come and go as synonyms. So we have these three parameters. So no surprise that we're taking XYZ and turning it into the three other descriptors, but these descriptors now stand for a reflectance, and that reflectance is standing for the set of all reflectances that could have been created that same color stimulus, the same XYZ, the set of metamers. So his equation to solve was, I had this before, but in his paper looks like this, which is we are talking about the color stimulus, the phi here is our XYZ, and we have the sensor sensitivities in the illuminance spectrum, and then the rest of it's just the regular thing, but here's the rectangular metamer, so that we have the gray component and the optimal reflectance. This X2 is the just a name for the optimal reflectance function that we were talking about. So the upper line there is the rectangular metamer composed of the gray, and the optimal reflectance is on the boundary of the object color solid, and the lower line is basic, and notice it's all multiplied, it's one integral. And that's really three equations that are here because we've got the color stimulus for each I, 1, 2, 3. So the issue of finding and converting from one coordinate to another is given the X, Y, Z, you want to find the lambda, lambda 1, lambda 2, and alpha, or the lambda 1, lambda 2, and the alpha that are the stand for that rectangular metamer. So it means boils down to minimizing, and you want to find this, but it's not simple to go do that in a straightforward way. Or I mean, you can go do it straightforwardly, but that's when it takes the days of computation. So the strategy that we used for solving this problem is to first find the optimal reflectance O, and second calculate the purity, that is the alpha. So and we're going to minimize the angular error between the two, thinking of those vectors. We have the from G to O and from G to C, and we have the angle between those, and we're trying to find a solution which minimizes it. The advantage of this right at the moment is it turns a three-dimensional problem into a two-dimensional problem. So our search space becomes a 2D space instead of a 3D space. So you can solve for which optimal reflectance function you want first, then solve for alpha reasonably simply. So the question becomes how to solve for O and minimize this error. If you go just start the minimization kinds of things going, they don't work very well. So directly, that is, there are lots of local minima in this space, and so you don't converge to what you want. So we went after starting with an interpolation to get good starting values. And so we project the color solid onto a two-dimensional plane, and this sort of roughly describes it, where the black lines are intersecting the boundaries of the object color solid. We're projecting those colors onto the, a two-dimensional space. So that this gives us it's quick to do this in the forward direction. That is, given delta and lambda, it's sort of a description of a rectangular metamer, it's easy to compute its XYZ values. Going the other direction isn't so easily. So we sampled those, made those two-dimensional, using spherical coordinates, as I just was describing there, stereographic coordinates, rather, that we're projecting them onto a plane that gives us a place to make, essentially, do lookup or interpolation. So if you spread them all out, you've got these type 1 and 2, type 2s don't matter, but you've got lots of different things spread in over a plane where you sampled it originally, sampling around the object color solid in a uniform angle kind of way. And then the reverse direction, finding the DL coordinate, is then reasonably quick. There's a very nice routine in MATLAB, triscattered interpolation, which does a very clever triangulation of the space, and you can give it something in that space of this sort of unorganized data, and it will find things very nicely for you. So we can go from chromaticity, little x, little y, to delta and lambda reasonably well as an interpolation that gives a good starting guess for a further optimization. And then it converges reasonably quickly. Okay, so what's it good for, you might say? So there are two different things here. There's an atlas that he's developed, and I'm investigating, and then we can compute more quickly. Then can we apply it to things? And I think there are many different kinds of things you can apply it to. We have a few examples here. Just of things that he was first of all interested in is the perceptual coordinates of his ADL space. Do they align up with anything at all? And he ended on the Mund cells, but we can now look at images. So here's this was a multispectral image, and we can render it under D65. And then consider a plot of the central wavelength, plot as intensity, and you can see it sort of correlates with hue. For example, the red apple all comes out as one hue, and similarly the yellow lemon comes out as one hue, give or take. This similar kind of thing for purity, which gives you a grayness or saturation kind of idea, and the spectral bandwidth is a blackness-whiteness kind of correlate. So that's kind of reassuring. I've got other examples of this kind of thing, but some of these are given in interest of time. Anyway, other pictures, that same kind of idea of purity, bandwidth, and central wavelength. We can also deal with illumination change because we're going and saying it's a reflectance. If you've got a reflectance, then you can relight it. And so we can relight, and instead of von Kreis has the von Kreis coefficient rule kind of adaptation, has the problem that you're, at least in principle, can have an arbitrarily large error. In practice, it works pretty well. But Logvinenko's situation says we're starting with a reflectance that was a metameric to the ones, and so you're guaranteed to be in the class of metamers under the second illumination. That's a little difficult to get into one sentence. So if we have a scene under A, we can then re-render it. We had the scene under D65, then we can re-render it under A, and we can also consider the projection given that we re-rendered using the rectangular metamers. His atlas is invariant to illumination, but that does not mean that there's no change in the coordinates when you change. But the description is relatively stable. Let's stick with that. Here's a plot. Would you expect everything to lie in a line? This is purity under D65 versus purity under the red dots and blue dots. One stands for illuminated A and one for F11. They're basically falling out of line. Spectral bandwidth, whiteness blackness, is reasonably on the line. The hue component, the central wavelength, is also reasonably on the line. So there's a reasonable stability of the coordinates over a change in illumination. So in conclusion, The interpolation was often sufficient. We didn't have to then actually optimize for all of the cases, which was all slower. You could build a bigger table and do more interpolation. It was reasonably fast. It's now usable in images. Not usable in real time, but usable. And our initial image test sort of validates some of the things that he had predicted about it. So that's the end. Any questions or suggestions? Yes, Mike.
Yes, Brian, we probably had this, something like this discussion before, but I wonder how the model would change if you started with a different anchor point. Instead of the gray, you could go all the way up the neutral axis. In fact, you could pick any spectrum at all as your anchor spectrum, as long as it stood inside the object color solid, which we have to, then you could work the entire problem with that anchor rather than the gray. How sensitive do you suppose, what is the importance of it being gray?
Simple answer is I don't know. I mean, yes, I agree with you that you could move the origin around, at least in terms of what we're computing, and you'd have a different coordinate system. Whether then you would have the right kind of perceptual correlates that Sash is after, I'm not sure.
You better find the magic in the gray.
I think there could be some magic in the gray, but I would go back to asking him. Okay. That's where I'd start. Yeah.
Any other questions?
There's one back here.
That's very interesting talk. So I have just one single question. There is on the gray chart, on the chart, the bandwidth has a dramatic change on the neutral patches. The bottom row, I would suppose the bandwidth is supposed to be the same for the neutral patches, right? But it was changed. Could you comment on that?
I didn't totally hear you, unfortunately. The neutral patches are, let's see, the gray axis, you go lightness, darkness with the bandwidth, right? With things that are broad, get lighter. If you make them narrow, they're dark in this scheme. So small bandwidth makes it dark.
I see. All right, thank you.
And we can talk about it.
Okay. Thank you for your attention. We thank the three presenters once again. Thank you.